Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Upgrade your laundry routine with a durable and reliable Maytag laundry pair at Lowe's. Like the new Maytag washer and dryer with performance-enhanced stain-fighting power designed to cut through serious dirt and grime. And what's great is this laundry pair is in stock and ready for delivery when you need it the most. Don't miss out. Shop Maytag in-store or online today at Lowe's.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This is Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer. Inside the evidence, behind the headlines, from someone who's been there. Here now, Jennifer Coffendaffer.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host, I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Oh, this is one of those sessions that I knew was coming. We have a lot of these interviews that are going to be coming forward. Again, there is no way that the surviving witnesses of the Idaho 4 murders, the surviving victims of 1122 King Road, were only interviewed once, but just released today. And again, we're talking about the Idaho 4 murders, the vicious murders by Brian Koperger, 214, as I refer to him often. That is his inmate number, the last three of his inmate number. Viciously murdered Maddie Mogan, Ethan Chapin, Zanna Kernodle, and Kayla Gonzalez back November 13th, 2.5 years ago now, really going on 3 years. The case has been adjudicated, but all the information is coming out right now. And just released within the last many hours was the interview, really not the initial interview, because Bethany Funk was actually interviewed also on scene, and that is discussed. I have put the interview of her on my Twitter X for everybody to see. You can literally just click that link and it's gonna go straight into the interview. There's nothing before it, nothing after it. Very easy for everybody to see. I'm not gonna play it now because it is very long, and with commentary and everything, it would just be a very long time. I don't want to keep you all too long this evening. I know this is a little bit impromptu, but I thought it was really important. I've gone through that interview with a fine tooth comb today, and I want to review some of the reflections I have about the interview, really from beginning to end. And for those of you who haven't seen it yet, please go on Coffendaffer FBI. That's on X. And take a look at it. I think that you'll be interested to see it. If not, I'm really going to go through from A to Z of sort of really what happened, the information that was provided, and just my general reflections about the interview style, and so forth, strictly from an FBI agent point of view. So without further ado, let's get started here. First of all, I'm just going to critique the interview, if you will. Number one, I was very surprised that there was not a female in that interview. Typically, when you interview a female, even though it's recorded, you want a female, because a lot of times a female can interact a little bit more easily with another female. A lot of times it will put that individual a little bit more at ease in this situation. Throughout the interview, Bethany was extremely upset. She was crying the entirety of the time. Her voice was not at all strong. Her voice was very broken, very weak, very traumatized. You know, for those of you who might be in the medical profession, the first thing you do is get what we call an initial impression of a patient. And in the FBI, we do the same. We get an initial impression. How are they acting? What's their general demeanor? And the general impression that you walk in, I'm sorry, the initial impression when you walk in and look at Bethany, and her face was obscured, but you could hear her voice, you could see her movements, you could see how withdrawn she was absolutely terrified, traumatized, telling the truth, just of an individual that had was almost incapable of talking, but knew she had to speak with investigators. I found it interesting, again, that a female wasn't in there. I also found it interesting that there weren't two investigators in there. At least you can't see the second one. I don't think there was a second one. But let me explain, and I'm not trying to be critical, because I will say that I really liked this investigator. I believed his interviewing style was very good, extremely good. He was very well organized. He was empathetic. He was very understanding of her. He wasn't at all dominating. It was almost like talking to Santa or talking to a grandfather in the room. And I'm not saying he was that old, but I'm just saying he was just very easy to speak with, I think. So I thought that that was really the upside for things. I was really impressed, not only by how he questioned, but the questions he asked. I wanted to talk about the phone. So the first thing he does essentially is ask her to have that phone. Now, in the FBI, I can tell you what, I would have gotten a written consent form signed, no matter what the condition of the person I was interviewing. Just to get their verbal consent, even though it's recorded, would not be enough. I would want the written consent where you go over the fact that they have the right not to let you see their phone, where they have full rights to withdraw. You know, if you're looking through the phone and they want you to stop, whatever it might be. In this case, he was asking to essentially seize it. And he says he'll give it back at a later time. She asks if she can phone or text the mom. She does that. He allows that. And they go through the passcodes. Again, the interesting thing I thought is, I think it's no matter what condition they're in, I thought it was very critical that he get a written consent form. And he did not do that. I'm not sure why. It's probably somewhat a matter of policy. I can tell you, FBI, you would get a consent form signed. I thought it was also very important. You never know how long the individual you're interviewing is going to be up for interviewing. You don't know, especially with somebody like Bethany, are they going to have a total breakdown and you're going to lose them in 3 minutes? They're either going to hyperventilate, they're going to pass out. I've had all these things happen. They're just not capable physically of speaking to you. So I thought it was very important that he get sort of that, the information out that could lead them down other paths. Because remember, at this time, this investigator doesn't know if she could be involved. Could she be part of a conspiracy? Did, you know, the mean girls gang up on the other girls? Were they a part of a boyfriend coming in and doing this? Were they any part of this? Even though I think the initial impression of this investigator would have been, whoa, 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 this is a very traumatized and truthful young lady. That would have been my initial impression. And then, of course, you go through the questioning and see if that holds up. So anyway, as she's as they're discussing things, he also asks for everything to do with her social media. So that's a big part at the beginning. If any of you watch this, you could kind of skip through because it's a lot that's bleeped out because she's trying to say, or she's not trying, she's telling him, listen, these are my handles, this is the platforms, blah, 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 blah. And then they go through all of that. So that's sort of the beginning. I thought that that was wise of him for two reasons. One, you got to get that information and let's get it while she's capable. Number two, you can't start off an interview like this jumping into the most emotional parts of this interview. That would be counterproductive. It would not give her a chance to sort of just settle in with answers and questions that are matter of fact. And so it's very important when you're having an interview like this that you work your way up to the very difficult questions. I think he did a very good job at that. You know what I noticed too with her, and it's just kind of a side, Bethany is very, very polite. She just, you know, please and thank you. Even in this horrible situation and environment, you can tell she was, I'm just going to say it, brought up right, brought up the way people should act, not only toward law enforcement, but toward each other. I got the feeling that Bethany is a person who is very respectful and who was really brought up right in terms of her interaction with adults. And yes, she's an adult, but I mean an older adult, let's call it her elder. And that so often in so many ways is lost these days, that just politeness and respect. And I really was glad to see that that was who Bethany is, I believe. Another thing that, and this is critical, that I thought was really important, Bethany was not wasted. You know, I can't tell you, for me, and maybe for some of you, I am so irritated, not only at the shame game that so many have put on these, on Dylan Mortensen and on Bethany Funk, blaming them for surviving. When you hear, and I'm going to go through it, the order of events that happened that night, it is a miracle that she also wasn't murdered. It really was. She could have been in the line of attack very easily when you hear this timeline. And it's a miracle. But it also tells me that I don't believe, obviously, that she was the target. And we're going to get into a couple of these details that she gives that makes me believe that even stronger now than ever. All right. Let's see. The next thing the questioning goes into is timeline. And this is perfect because, again, law enforcement, this is one of the main things that any law enforcement officer from the beginning of the investigation, you want to tighten up your timeline. You want to see if it falls into place with what other people say. You want to have an understanding, when did all of this really transpire? And particularly because you don't know if you're talking to somebody who's going to be a subject of this investigation, you want to get them nailed down, at least generally. What did they do? Who did they see? And where did they go? Specifically, now you know you can contact other people to line out whether all of that is true or not. So she gives a lot of detail. And those details, I believe, were used very much to end up clearing her and giving her a solid alibi and a solid belief that she wasn't involved by law enforcement. Remember, back in the day, very early on in the investigation, law enforcement started putting out sort of these weekly not involved, not involved, not involved lists, because social media, mainstream media, and just people were going bananas, blaming everybody, blaming the boyfriends, blaming, you know, everybody, blaming the roommates. It was so ridiculous. And I know we're in the twilight zone because it's still not ending. I still go on and see it. And I've really thought, I did point out one account, and there's another account I really want to point out too. But I feel like, no, just let them die down where they all just are circulating amongst each other with their nonsense and their baloney that's not fact-based. And you know, I just pray that Bethany and Dylan never come across these types of people. I'm sure they don't even get on social media much ever, for fear of what they might encounter. But nevertheless, this officer goes straight from facts of who, you know, what your accounts are, what's your phone number, all of that. And then now he goes into the timeline. This is a perfect segue. It's still not getting into the critical moments that he wants to get to, but rather establishing moments that she can just recount that aren't you know, hysteria causing. So she talks about how she hung out with Zana and Ethan. And she particularly says that they came over at about 8:30 at night, and that Ethan had been at his formal with his sister. I just want to pause right there. How sweet is that? Apparently, his sister did not have a date to the formal, and you know, a sorority fraternity type formal, and so he took her. I just loved that little nugget, that little detail. You know, not only is she giving a glimpse as to her, who Bethany is, she's giving a glimpse into who Ethan was. I just thought that was such a sweet, tender detail that she provided. So then they talk about how they met at 8:30. They were at the house. They end up going to another friend's house that lives down the street. They talk all about that, or she talks about that. Again, when she's speaking, for those of you who haven't heard it yet, maybe going to go back to listen to it, maybe don't want to be traumatized tonight and listen to the fear and utter agony of this girl. But if you do end up going back, you're going to hear how she's actually pretty fluid, and he does a good job of keeping her on point and does what good interviewers will do, and that is repeat what she says at times to make sure he has an accurate understanding, especially somebody who's this upset, traumatized, and trying to remember all these details under these circumstances. But she says that Maddie and Kaylee at this time, they don't go to a buddy's house, but they are going to the corner club, right? Which we kind of know all this, but again, I'm recounting this from the eyes and the memory of Bethany. So anyway, they hang out at this other house. He gets into a lot of detail on exactly where this house is, and it's on Taylor Street. She says it's kind of at the end of the street. She guesses that that they leave for that house around midnight, and that they stay, or at least Bethany stays for about 40 minutes. So she goes, but she doesn't stay that long. She says she's tired. She comes back and she estimates. And again, these estimates that they give, this isn't lying when it ends up being a little off or anything, because you're going to probably hear or see multiple interviews. I don't know if we'll ever see the FBI's interviews, but there's this interview, and then there's the interview that was done in front of the house, right proximal to the event. So we're going to get to see that. And if she's off by a few minutes, I mean, I was glad to see her use kind of windows of time, you know, about one, about midnight, because I think it was a true reflection of what she could remember. She even says, hey, listen, that officer who asked me at the time, I think I was more, you know, able to remember, you know, even though this is right after the event, right when police came to the house, she's saying she thought she knew the times better, because as the gravity of everything is setting in with Bethany, you know, it's getting more and more difficult for her mind to think clearly. And I want to reiterate one last time, she is not wasted. She is not, you know, unable to form words. She is definitely cognizant, definitely very coherent. And as we've talked about before, these are college kids. They're enjoying their college life. And the way they have been judged for being these, you know, party, druggy, you know, people is so far off base. And I think anybody who watches this interview, and as we continue to see how they reacted, we got a glimpse with the 911 call months ago. And now we're seeing this interview and, of course, hearing from various other reports, or seeing various other reports and able to read about them. These were just your typical college kids. And of course they're out late. Of course they're having a good time. God bless them. If I could do college all over again and not have the strains of, you know, making a mortgage and working and making decisions every day that are important about my children, blah, blah, blah. Who doesn't want to go back to that carefree life where you could go and have some beers with your buddies and watch Vampire Diaries? So anyway, I think it became more clear than even before. She wasn't a, you know, wasted college girl who couldn't remember anything. It was very clear here. Okay, moving on. She says that then she comes back home after the 40 minutes at this friend's house down the street about 1 o'clock, and she starts watching The Vampire Diaries with Dylan. And they just hang out, she says, you know, watching Vampire Diaries. We kind of, again, this is stuff we knew, but I'm just reiterating it because this is what you're going to see on this video. She says Maddie and Kaylee came home, and she estimates around 2, which is a pretty darn good estimate. So they come home around 2. And again, she reiterates that, listen, if you look back at what I said to that initial officer, it might be even more clear on my time. So she's even good about saying, she's cognitive enough to say, hey, listen, I know I was in a better place initially interviewed because all this wasn't sinking in. And now it's really sinking in with her. And you can hear by some of the things she says further. Okay. So then she says they go hang out in Kaylee's room. So they stop right watching The Vampire Diaries and they go hang out in Kaylee's room with Kaylee and Maddie for a while. And then Maddie and Bethany. So I should have said that Kaylee and Maddie had come home by this time. So they're hanging out in Kaylee's room for a little while. Then Bethany and Maddie take Murphy, the dog, out. Okay, so she says they go and they take Murphy out. And she doesn't stay a long time. She says she's tired. And Murphy apparently stays out with Maddie. Anyway, she goes in and she goes to bed. Now, she's in bed for a while. She estimates from about 2:30 to 3. And she specifically says she watches 30. She grabs some chips from the kitchen and that she starts watching a show. And she says she thinks she watches about a half an hour of it. And that in the middle of the show, Maddie comes in and says, hey, have you seen Murphy? And she's like, no, I haven't seen Murphy. So how I pictured is they come down from the, you know, Kaylee's room. They walk down. They take Murphy. They go outside. And Maddie's outside with Murphy for whatever period of time. Bethany leaves. And so she doesn't really exactly know what happened to Maddie after that or what happens to Murphy after that. But she falls asleep because, you know, she falls asleep. There's nothing dramatic about any of that. Then this is where it gets interesting. So she watches for a half an hour. Again, remember, she's interrupted by Maddie. She falls asleep. So she's kind of barely asleep, kind of in that, you know, half asleep phase. And this is what she sees. She says she describes it as fireworks, but she doesn't mean a noise. She's talking about, and she specifically says, a sparkle. And she says, and she also hears like a loud noise, but not like the firework noise, but like a bang, like a crash, like something falling. And so she's not sure what's going on, but it's enough to wake her. But then she falls back, as we all do, on what makes sense to her. So what makes sense to her at that point is, oh my gosh, Ethan. I've heard Ethan up in the middle of the night. He's like crashing around, as guys will do. You know, she doesn't say that. I'm ad-libbing here. But just judging from my son, who was this exact same age and how he still is, man, he gets in the kitchen and he's going and he's rummaging, looking for something to eat and banging around. It's hysterical. That's what boys do. And she draws the attention to that in her mind. She's like, oh, Ethan probably dropped something. Recalling back to other times where Ethan would be around and drop something, be in the kitchen looking for food or whatever. So that's what goes on in her mind with these noises. She also says Murphy barks at this time. Now, the investigator specifically says, do you mean like growl? Do you mean like vicious? And she says words to the effect of, you know, Murphy barked when he was happy, that he just barked. Remember, Murphy was young. Murphy was, you know, a Labradoodle, I believe. He wasn't this vicious German Shepherd guard dog. And he was young. He was a puppy. So she says she hears him. And of course, that's not unusual either. He's not throwing a fit. He just barks. And the firework sparkler thing outside of her door, this is what it makes me wonder. I'm just wondering, and we don't know, could there have been possibly some sort of flare? That's kind of what that reminded me of. I don't know, because we have zero information of that, right? We've never heard about a flare. I certainly don't think it was a taser. That's been discussed too. But a light source, let me just say it as that way. So not a flare like, you know, you literally would throw up if you were on a boat and needed help. But a flare type device. There's so many different lighting devices. And Brian Koberger, 214, makes me believe that he would know of different light source devices that would be used, that would be low lit, less, you know, put out less lumens, so that if you're looking in, it's not like you see a burglar going through with this huge light screen, but rather you use like sticks that you break where you use to see, but they're low light fluorescent type lumen luminescence that you can use where you can still see, but you're not this big target. And this is something very important tactically that people who understand law enforcement and so on, people who burgle, they understand the last thing you want to have is a scene like in Watergate, for those of you old enough to remember, where they had these flashlights looking through files and things in the Watergate Hotel and Plaza, and, you know, very visibly seen in there. So I could see him using some sort of, can break them and they have a fluorescent shine or sheen. I wondered if perhaps that was something that she could have seen. Was he outside of her door ever? Was he outside of her door? So that goes back to my point of how lucky I believe she was to survive this, how truly, truly lucky she was to survive this, because I don't believe it would have been anything else but 214 there with some sort of device to see, tactically speaking, that reminded her of a sparkle or luminescence from a fluorescent source. All right, moving on. So then she gets a call from Dylan right around the same time. And she says, Dylan says, Bethany, I saw somebody. And so, and of course we've known all this, but again, I'm going through Bethany's eyes. So it's redundant from a lot of the information we've reviewed and the police reports we've read. But she says she called her and she says, I think I saw somebody. I think I saw a man in the house. And of course, Bethany's response, which makes all the sense in the world to me, is come on down here. Come go to sleep with me. We'll lock the door and we'll be here and be safe. And then she adds a caveat in here that I think is really important. She says that they've heard noises before, you know, creaks. And look at that house, the way it's designed, the stairwells, the way it's on, you know, different floors. It's on this hill. People go in and out sort of at will. They don't lock their doors. So, of course, they've probably heard noises and had people in and out of the house before. And other than making Dylan feel creeped out by the figure she saw, I think Bethany has an absolute normal reaction. Hey, girl, come on down. We'll go to bed in the same bed together where we feel safe. We'll shut the door. Come on, ladies. How many times has something like that not happened with you when you were either home alone or home with your girlfriends or at your sorority house or at an apartment? You thought you heard something and you're like, come on, let's just go. Or you start out the night like that. Come on, let's just go to bed together because you just want that feeling of feeling safe and jabbering and going to sleep and not worrying about anything. So clearly Dylan was concerned, but again, I'm going to talk about this through the eyes of Bethany because this is Bethany's statement. And so she thinks it's kind of weird. She's heard this noise. She's seen this flare type, you know, firecracker, sparkly type thing below her door, she says. And then now Dylan's called. She says she doesn't know when Ethan's Anna came home. So she's thinking it could be them because she never heard them before she went to bed. And I think that's very critical to point out. She remembered, obviously, Kaylee and Maddie and hooked up with them in the room and then took Murphy out. She did not remember Zan and Ethan. So that's something else she, you know, was in her mind that, you know, maybe it could be them, right? She estimates this at 4:20 to 4:30. Those are her exact words. And I thought, wow, is she, you know, so spot on in a general time frame of really when that would have occurred? You know, just excellent sort of memory. And again, that's why it's so important to interview right on the spot. Then he goes on to say, oh, by the way, he also says this, or she says this. She said, listen, and you can tell she's having this inner struggle with herself. She's like, listen, you know, I'm repeating this right now. And she doesn't say that. But her message is to herself, she says, I didn't hear any screams. You know, I didn't know when Ethan and Zana got home. You know, we've heard things in the house before. So she verbalizes what's going on up here during this part of the interview, you know, because she's trying to reconcile with why. And you can see, I can feel the survivor's guilt already start sinking in. I mean, I hope she is getting some serious, serious counseling because I see it sneaking in already. Her somehow blaming herself because of the close friendship and love she had for these girls and knowing that they're gone. And Ethan, of course, and knowing by now that they're gone. And, you know, blaming herself, should I have realized? But then you can hear her say, but I didn't hear a scream. And, you know, I didn't know when Ethan and Zana got home. And sometimes he makes noises, Ethan, in the middle of the night and drops things. And you know, so she's rationalizing, trying to figure out how she didn't recognize this as more than what it was. And I would say she shouldn't have recognized it for more than what it was. Who would ever be able to mentally think about in your, I call them your tapes. We all have these tapes, which are our background and our experience. She never had a tape that would ever make her think that a mass murderer was in her house with a K-bar slaughtering her roommates. There's no part of her tapes that would tell her that. They would tell her everything else, you know, normal noises. And so anyway, it's really for me difficult for her or to listen to this. And I know it's going to be difficult for you all because you can hear in her voice how she's trying to figure out how this could have happened. Let me see. Last but not least, you know, he talks about, does anybody have issues? Does Kaylee have any issues? He makes her go through the breakup of Kaylee's breakup that occurred 3 months ago. And she explains, listen, they're buddies, they're friends, they're on great, you know, terms. Of course, we know, you know, she was even calling in the middle of the night, you know, whatever we call it drunk calling, right? When you're missing that person, when your anxiety level is down and you want to call and say, I miss you. We know that in the totality, but it backs up what, of course, she was saying. Kaylee didn't have any enemies. Maddie didn't have enemies. Zana, no one in that house had enemies. These are 20-year-old kids, 19, 20-year-old kids. And so anyway, but he's just trying to make sure. So you can see very early on, he's trying to get down. Are there problems in the house? And she very honestly and in a traumatic way says no. But this is the last nugget I want to share on this interview. And it's at the very end, if you all end up not wanting to go through the whole thing and just want to get to this tidbit, which is critical. Yes, I know we've heard about it. We've read about it in different documents. And different people have said different things for a while. I was posting it all on my Twitter, how that depending on who was interviewed, some people said that Kaylee had a stalker. Some people said Kaylee didn't have a stalker. Well, that question is asked of Bethany. And Bethany, to be precise, says this. She says, Kaylee told me she took Murphy out and saw someone outside as Murphy was peeing. These are her words. She says, Murphy was peeing. And she said, quote, Kaylee swears she saw somebody outside. And she gives a time frame. She says about a month ago. Every part of my investigative being would believe that if you line that up with the information from the cell phone data regarding 214 BK, I would bet dollars to donuts that that was very likely him. It reminds me so much, and I know many of you know my story, and I'm not going to digress and get into it much, but it reminds me very much when I was only 19 and I had somebody follow me and I totally blew it off, you know, oh yeah, no, they turned the other way. And then, you know, that was my demise. No, I blew it off. And I'm sure Kaylee, as she's seeing this, even though she shares it with her friend, you know, I think she, you know, she kind of blows it off. And, you know, she tells some people, doesn't tell some people. But she doesn't want to try to make more of something than really exists or seem paranoid or whatever. And so I think this is very real. I think it was likely him watching. And again, we've talked about the legal differences between stalking and surveilling, right? He's not like one of those stalkers that's calling up and then hanging up and wants you to know he's out there. He's out there. He's looking. That wasn't his goal. His goal was to surveil, to see patterns, to what we call do site surveys at places we're getting ready to hit, right? That's what he was doing. And I bet you dollars to donuts, that was him out there. And I also think there might be some truth with this relationship that he could have developed with Murphy. Remember, it was when Murphy went peeing. And remember, you know, that night, Murphy kind of disappears. And I've realized the timing doesn't work out perfectly with the vehicle being there and when he was there. But my point is, was how many times was he in that wooded area around that house? And how many times was maybe Murphy getting let out to go pee, and that he could have possibly established some sort of rapport with Murphy, who's a puppy and who likely is not going to raise a fuss anyway. It's not that kind of a breed. And so anyway, maybe it was only that time. I don't know, but I really believe this is good evidence that if we would have gone to trial, they would have used that particular statement and tried to line that up or see if it lined up with, not tried to line it up, see if it lined up with any of the information from the cell phone, from those all those times that that cell phone was pinging off that tower in the 1122 King Road area. Finally, I just want to end with... and let me just, how can I make myself small here? There we go. What Bethany has endured and what she will endure for years, decades to come is unless somebody has been through this and has been through a serious, terrible trauma, it never leaves you. It never leaves you. And this is going to never leave her. And then she's got on top of that survivor's guilt that her besties didn't make it out. And so I just ask, when you're online and when you are interacting with people online and you see somebody going after Bethany, I really deplore you. Say something, block them, get them off your string. You know, tell them, go with that to somebody who cares. Because to me, there's no room for nonsense like that, victimizing victims, with all we know. Zero room. So anyway, I hope we all take that challenge. I've tried to be really fervent about that on my space on Twitter. And let's try to protect Bethany and maybe get the airwaves of social media back to someday where she can try to look up a recipe or try to look up where a game is going to be. She's a sports fan. I actually had another picture that I wanted to put up of her at a ball game. I posted on my Twitter a long, long time ago. So, you know, where she can get on social media and look different things up and not have to worry about somebody coming after her or seeing something that she should never see. So hopefully we can clean that piece up. I think we can do our part with that and continue to support the surviving roommates. That is my rundown of her interview. I hope you go watch it. Yeah, I've got it on Coffin Daff for FBI, where it's just from beginning to end with no talking in the middle. So you can go through it quickly or slowly, whatever you choose. And everybody, until next time, I can't say I think justice was fully served in this case, but I think that justice was at least served because the person who did this to these kids will never be out the rest of his life. And that's good. All right, everyone. Till next time. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you all.
Want to break the case with Jennifer Coffendaffer even more? Then press subscribe right now and join Jen on YouTube. Just search Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer now.
Moro Casino. American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.